Hey guys, this is your host Nitin Binhani and a very warm welcome to my startup podcast channel Jazair Audio, where we share real stories with real learnings.
Roughly one out of every four startups that fail is due to the lack of right leadership, that is, inability to hire and retain the best talent to grow their startup. And if that's not all, more than 50% of the founders get replaced by a CEO after the Series A round. And to help founders in this arena, my guest today is Rachel Turner, the co-founder of VC Talent Lab UK, and she is the author of bestseller The Founder's Survival Guide. Rachel also helps founders in enhancing their leadership skills as they scale their businesses. And in this podcast, Rachel covers the key challenges that most entrepreneurs face in their transition from founder to a CEO as their businesses scale up. So let's welcome today's special guest. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to Jazair Audio. Pleasure to have you here.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
So to start with, can you share a bit about your background and, you know, what inspired you to write the Founder's Survival Guide?
Yeah, so I set up 5 businesses before I was 25, and I was really good at starting businesses and I'd always get them off the ground. But when the point came where I had to hire people and manage people and build a team, I could never do that. I found it very frustrating. And so when I sold my businesses, I was fascinated by the psychology of leadership and why I struggled so much at that scale-up phase. So I did a degree in applied psychology, a 2-year qualification in executive coaching, and then I've spent the last 22 years coaching full-time, largely coaching entrepreneurs, self-employed people, founders. And then about 5 years ago, became really fascinated by the VC ecosystem, particularly the fact that as few as 1 in 4 founders will retain the role of CEO by the time you get to an IPO. And that's not taking into consideration the fact that the majority of businesses won't even get that far. And when you look at the causes for the failure of VC-backed businesses, 1 in 4 is a failure of leadership. And these are, you know, it's overwhelm, stress, loss of focus, loss of function in the team, poor relationships with investors. These are all the kinds of problems that CEOs of large organizations get a lot of support with, you know. So executive coaching and leadership development within a corporate setting is really ubiquitous. But within the VC ecosystem, historically, VCs have given a lot of support on hiring. They've given a lot of support on ops, go-to-market strategy, but they really haven't done much helping founders become CEOs. And so we set up VC Talent Lab 3 years ago, and I wrote the book, The Founder Survival Guide, which was published last year, to really support founders on that journey.
Great. So what are the 5 or 6 common challenges that most founders typically face as they scale their businesses from 0 to 1?
So just a couple of context pieces. First of all, the journey a founder is going to go on if they're bootstrapping their business will be quite different than the journey that a founder will go on if they've just received a lot of venture capital. Only really difference in intensity. So these challenges that I'm mentioning are very, very prevalent for founders who've just received a whole bunch of... Because if you think about it, if you've gone and you've done a large Series A investment or a Series B investment, what the VC is doing is they're giving you 10 million, 50 million, 100 million pounds to go and build the business itself. So up until that point, you've had a good idea. You've had, you know, a small group of people helping you. You've got a good idea of how to take this idea to market. But then suddenly you receive all this money to build your business at scale. And what that means is you're going to hire a lot of people. You're going to need to build an entire business engine. So the challenges I'm about to talk about are very extreme there. They're still challenges if a founder is bootstrapping gradual growth in the business, but they'll just come more slowly and more gently if you're bootstrapping. So either way, and probably in order, the first is managing performance. So if you think about what makes someone great at starting a business, they're typically people who are very innovative and quite creative. They've got this new idea. They're pretty good at selling, whether that's selling their idea to investors or selling their idea to initial clients. They're probably very comfortable with uncertainty and risk. They work quite fast. So that style of leadership is what I would call entrepreneurial, or in the book, I call it brave warrior leadership. Now, when you're now trying to build the business at scale, you're trying to kind of architect this superstructure. You're building systems and processes. You're bringing on people. You're trying to set people up to perform really well. And the very things that made you successful at the startup phase are going to make you unsuccessful at this phase. So the things that founders are typically really, really struggle with are managing performance. So how do you hire somebody who is going to be a good fit? How do you onboard them so they're successful? How do you set them up to succeed? How do you give them feedback? How do you manage them on an ongoing basis? As I'd say, managing the performance of the top team you hire is something that all founders struggle with, well, most founders struggle with, and takes up an awful lot of their brain space. The second, so that's managing individual performance. I'd say the second challenge is, particularly if you're scaling really rapidly, you're going to run from being a founder-led company to being a leadership team-led company with you as a CEO. So you now suddenly have to get really good at creating a high-performance team. And there's lots of challenges with teams. You know, how do you move a group of people from never having worked together before to being a really high-performance team, a group that is characterized by low politics, not a lot of water cooler bitching, sorry to swear, but, you know, real honesty and transparency, and they've got each other's back. So building a really good high-performance team is I'd say, the second. The third in order, I would say, is managing overwhelm and focus. As you scale, getting crystal clear on the things that you need to stop doing and where you need to focus your energy is really difficult, particularly because some of the things you'll need to stop doing are things that you really enjoy. So suddenly you're in a position where, you know, your superpower is selling, but now you've hired a chief revenue officer and now you need to be helping that individual perform and build their own team rather than just jumping in and doing the work yourself. And then when there's you and sort of 12 people with a new idea, you can have lots and lots of ideas and you can try different things out. When you're suddenly trying to create this engine, this sort of business at scale, you're trying to craft clarity. You're trying to make sure that everybody in the team and in the wider organization knows what the priorities are, knows what to focus on. And if you're continuing to work in that sort of very innovative three new ideas before breakfast, you're just confusing everybody and you'll be getting yourself overwhelmed. So managing the overwhelming amount of stuff that people want you to do and deciding within that where you're focusing your attention, and then helping your leadership team and the wider organization with that focus as well. So number three would be overwhelm and focus. I think number four probably say is culture. So understanding, you know, most founders will tell you that they know that culture is really important, but actually most entrepreneurs are not former chief people officers. They are not people who've worked in HR before. So understanding how you build culture and then leading effectively through that is something I see people really struggle with and get wrong. A lot of early entrepreneurs, and I think I was one of these, thinks that culture is about, let me sit in a room. These are the four behaviors that I think should be our culture. I'll put them on a mug, put them around the office, and then we'll be gone. But actually really understanding how you build culture and how the sort of the mission of the organization, the values of the organization need to underpin all of your processes and systems, your internal comms, your interview processes, your onboarding processes, your remuneration processes, your performance management. Yeah, making sure that you're hardwiring culture into all of these, and then also being aware that your individual behavior as a founder will be a more important contributor to group culture, organizational culture, than almost anything else that you do. So I really see entrepreneurs wanting to grapple with culture, but really struggling because it's big and all encompassing. And then the final one that I'd say, and I don't think any founder would put it in these words, by the way, but struggling to know when to do, when to manage, and when to lead. And no founder will use that language, but what it really means is that as founders are really good individual contributors, that's that brave warrior I was talking about. They're very good at hitting nails with hammers and taking action. That's what's made them successful in the startup phase. As they grow, they're going to need to get equally good at managing teams, managing individuals. And then as they continue to grow, they're going to need to get very good at leading, you know, strategy, focus, strategic priorities, visionary leadership. Now, the unfortunate thing for founders is that as they scale, they're going to have to pivot between those three different modes on a regular basis. So the language that I use a lot in the book is pivoting between the brave warrior, the individual contributor, the doer, the considered architect, which is more the sort of managerial operational leadership, and then the wise monarch, which is more of the traditional sort of leadership that you'd expect to see from a CEO. You know, CEO in a large organization has had 20 years moving between these three modes. And they've had loads of coaching and leadership development and support, and they've had role models. So they get to make this journey from doing to managing to leading over a long period of time with a lot of support. Founders are expected to pivot between all three ways of operating every day and get all of them right very quickly.
Interesting. So what strategies should the founders apply to navigate through these challenges and grow their businesses?
Yeah, there's so many. The first is, it's really difficult because it will depend on the founder. Some founders are really comfortable leaning into learning about management and learning about leadership. And some people really don't like it. First thing I would always say is think about the team that you need around you. And if you know that systems, processes, sort of considered operational day-to-day rigor, if you know that isn't your thing, then definitely hire a great chief of staff or a COO or a great chief people officer, all three can inhabit the role, who can take the majority of that management, sort of day-to-day management off your shoulders. However, that comes with a big caveat. That doesn't mean that you can just continue going and doing your entrepreneurial flair thing, because even if you're delegating that sort of operational management to somebody in your team, there's still a lot that's required of you as a founder. So making sure that you give, if you go to do that, if you're going to hire a chief, COO or a chief of staff, making sure that you're giving them what they need to be successful as they try to create operational grip is really important. Let's be clear on what we mean by operational grip. You need a structure, particularly with your leadership team, of how you're going to meet, how you're going to make decisions, and how you're going to track performance over the course of a year. So you will need to institute a cadence of regular meetings. And when we work with clients, we talk a lot about the different types of meetings you want to put in place. There'll be annual strategic offsites. There'll be quarterly performance reviews and strategic reviews. There'll be monthly meetings, and then there'll be weekly huddles. And creating that cadence of meetings and then sticking to it and making sure that the decisions are made in the right spaces. So, you know, not deciding at a strategic offsite with your entire leadership team that you're going to focus on, you know, sector A, and then deciding on a Tuesday to change everything and go off to sector B. So honoring the consistency that you're creating is really important for a founder. That's sort of that one piece. And within that, a lot of founders will also need to grapple with how to create a strong operational dashboard, which allows you and your leadership team to track important data in business on a regular basis. Because as you're scaling and you have more and more people involved, you know, it's easy when you're doing all the sales, you know how many people you've got in your pipeline, you know how much you've got to deliver, you can feel all of that. But if you're now trying to operate at a business, that data is going to come from multiple sources and needs to be curated in a really good dashboard. That would be the whole one, like create a cadence of meetings and systems and processes that allow you to manage. Even if that's delegated to someone else, you need to be very, very involved and really lean into that process. I think the second thing is, my recommendation would be to learn something about management and learn something about high-performance teams. So that's why we have BC Talent Lab, but we do both leadership development and we do coaching. So a traditional coach will ask you questions about how you think you should do something. Whereas within leadership development, you're really talking about being given some frameworks and some tools. So for example, one of my posts went viral on LinkedIn recently is how to give feedback. But founders are really struggle with giving feedback. So understanding, you know, how to onboard a member of a team effectively, how to work with them to clarify what expectations they have of you and you have of them in the first 90 days, understanding how to track performance and run a good one-to-one session, how to give people feedback. You need to learn some stuff. So strategy one, cadence of meetings and processes. Strategy two, learn about managing people. And then the third thing is I would really get some support, because the founder journey is really isolating, very stressful and relentless. And investors are there to give you advice, but you can't go and tell them your fears, really. You know, your team needs you to be the answer to all their problems. So I really encourage people, get a mentor, but also have a group of, I call them my bishops, a group of people around me who I trust, who I can just call up and say, oh, I'm having a bad day. So get a good group of support people around you.
Great. Quite often we have seen the boards replace the founders to bring in a new CEO. Where do you think such entrepreneurs lack in this transition from being a founder to a CEO?
So I think it's important to recognize where that's coming from. I say this a lot. The things that make you a brilliant entrepreneur, the superpowers of that startup phase become the kryptonite of the next phase. And this is a great example of that. If you think about the superpowers, you know, what do you need in order to be a successful entrepreneur at the startup phase? You need almost bulletproof self-confidence, otherwise called high ego, because really hard, you know, your first couple of clients, your first couple of investors to get people buying into your dream. You need to sort of be going out pitching 90, 100 times, getting turned down and keep going. And so you tend to find that people who have successfully launched a business have bulletproof self-confidence and high ego. And that then becomes a real vulnerability, because as you move into management and leadership, it needs to be about the people that you're leading and the needs of the organization. And that high ego can mean that you're left clinging to this idea that you're supposed to be, you're the guru, you know the answer to all questions, that it's not okay to show vulnerability, that it's not okay to show uncertainty. And also, oftentimes that high bulletproof self-confidence and high ego can come with quite a high need for control. So this is a massive generalization, but a lot of founders that I work with, their two highest needs are a need for freedom and a need for control. So they don't want to have to do what other people tell them to do. That's why they want to start their own business. They want to do it their way. And they like achieving and making things happen and having control. And those two things, again, are probably why part of why they decided to start the business. Then suddenly, when you're managing people, you don't have the freedom that you had at the startup phase. You need to fit within this cadence, this process. And so that can become difficult. So you can kick against the things that you need to do to be a good manager of a business. And then similarly, the need for control can become really difficult as you move through from managing. You know, so managing your challenge because you don't have the freedom that you want because you've got to show up to these boring weekly meetings and do these boring one-to-one sessions. And then other people have different ideas and you don't like them very much. And then as you scale even further and you move into the CEO space, the CEO has a lot of influence, but not a lot of control. So the CEO is about delegating authority for decision-making to your leadership team and then holding the vision and the strategy and working through people, not directly hitting nails on the head with a hammer. So I think the reason that a lot of founders struggle to make this journey from founder to CEO is that they got into running their own business because they wanted freedom and autonomy and they wanted control. And then to be a great CEO, they have to sacrifice some of those things. And unless they have people speaking the truth to them, unless they have people just highlighting the journey that they need to go on, what they'll do instead is believe their own hype, believe that they're brilliant, get more and more stuck in this kind of high ego control state, and eventually be removed because they're not giving the organization what it needs from them.
In that case, shouldn't the board be coaching their portfolio founders to improve their leadership skills? I mean, what could be the gaps in such a scenario?
So I work with a lot of investors, and actually I think they try really hard and they do care, the investors I work with anyway. But you need to understand the dynamics between an investor and a founder. And they're a different dynamic than I have with a founder. In the same way that I'm very good at coaching, but the one person I cannot coach is my son. And that's because there is a power dynamic. I have more power in that relationship than he does. And also I have an agenda. I think he should do what I think he should do. Hey, he's 21 and he disagrees. It's a similar thing with investors and founders. First thing is that they have a different view of the world. Founder is in the weeds of the business. They're seeing things from their customers that the investor doesn't see. So sometimes an investor's well-meaning advice isn't appropriate for the business. The second thing is there's a different agenda. Yes, of course, both investor and the founder want the business to be successful, but they will often have different views on how to do that. And then the final thing is that founders are really, really busy. And oftentimes investors who think they're being helpful are just actually distracting the founder from the business of running their, you know, the day-to-day work of running their business. So you feel a bit of resistance. So I think there's a variety of reasons why it's quite difficult for all investors to coach founders. And I think it's easier for someone external. You know, when we work with a founder, the only agenda we have is the agenda the founder sets. And that's a very different relationship than the one they'd have with an investor.
Finally, can you share a real-world example of a founder whom you help in his entrepreneurial journey to build a great business?
Yeah, I'll give you probably one of my favorite examples. So this was a founder. He's running a globally distributed company. They've just done their Series B and they are scaling very rapidly. So when I met him, he and his co-founder were really struggling with the performance of the people that they'd hired. They were getting really frustrated. The leadership team were pretty unhappy. There were just lots of dissatisfaction. We coached each of the co-founders individually and then we worked with the leadership team. First thing that we did is we interviewed everyone on the leadership team to understand what was working well, what was working less well. Things that they were saying is, we don't feel safe. I'm going to call this founder Bob. His name isn't Bob. Bob changes all the time. He's really frustrated. He's fired some people that we thought were really good. So now we feel our jobs are at risk. And then at the same time, I also interviewed Bob. And Bob was saying, I don't know why my team aren't taking responsibility. Their performance isn't what it needs to be. They're just not generating the results. And then people were saying, everything needs to be perfect with Bob. If there's one typo on an internal deck, he'll get very upset and very angry. So first thing we did is we did some psychometrics of Bob and his business partner, which showed that on their motivational map around building team was as low as it's possible to be. So neither of them just not into team. And what was really nice is we got the whole team to do this and we put this up on the wall and the two co-founders, you could see them sort of saying, oh, we might be part of the problem. And so they went from that's all their fault to recognizing they might have something to do with it. Then we coached them as a team to understand how they needed to behave with each other, what their priorities were going to be. We taught them how to give each other feedback. We introduced a cadence of management meetings and a sort of an agenda for those management meetings. And we made sure that the whole leadership felt a sense of responsibility. And so what Bob's done over 8 months is he used to speak first in business in meetings. He now speaks last. He used to focus on telling people what to do. And now he focuses on asking people what they need. And now they're having honest conversations together. You know, when there are problems, they sort them out. So the whole performance of the team has elevated up. That means is that Bob doesn't have to be in the weeds all the time. So now he's now building a really innovative new product. He's implemented this cadence of ways of working. He's learned how to manage his team. He's learned how to manage individual performance. That's allowed him time to focus on things that are really going to be game changing for the business.
Great. With this, we have reached at the end of this podcast, Rachel. Thank you so much for sharing great insights with us. It was a pleasure to host you today.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Lastly, I want to thank all the listeners who took their valuable time to listen to this podcast. Keep rocking, be safe, and don't forget to share.
Are you a founder of an early stage startup or the owner of a small or medium enterprise and looking to raise funding? Then please visit www.jasaro.in. That is www.jasaro.in.